did you cope with that? Did you feel any bitterness? So a couple of things there around perhaps feeling angry with God and where is God. How did that feel for you?
Do you
want to
go first?
Go on, Louise. Should we have Louise first? Or Dave first?
And you go first.
I'll start and you can kick me or chip in or something. I remember a really good friend who was one of the key families that supported us after Ben died, but who aren't people of faith, who said, how can you still believe? And I kind of really respected him for asking the question, actually. And I think the thing for me is I don't think belief is a kind of intellectual exercise. I think it happens within the context of your life. And so as much as we were very confused, and certainly there was anger, the question, and call the book What Happens Now, because it's like, what am I supposed to do? This is not just something for me to think about theoretically. How am I going to live? And it still made more sense than anything else. And it was still, for me, the go-to place in terms of, I talk about hope and help. Where else am I going to get that from? So I do remember being really angry when we got the diagnosis. I would say the bigger issue for me working this through was kind of spiritual shock than anger, which was I just didn't get it. So we went back to church because church made sense, and we've got a son and we're bringing him up, and how are we going to do this? And we're still going to go to church, albeit that we went to a different church. But it was like, we felt like, having been a church leader, felt like spectators. It was like, we're just going to come and witness this thing and see what we make of it. And what do I think of what the guy's preaching? And what do I think of this song? And am I going to sing it? So very much just sort of surveying from within, because that's what made most sense. Trying to just think, how do we begin to make some sense of this? So for me, it was more about shock than anger in terms of just thinking, I don't get this. I don't get prayer. You know, and just, but church was a very safe environment for us to ask questions and to rebuild.
Yeah. Louise, how did you find that?
Well, I think we were reasonably angry in quite a human way, to be honest. I think we did a lot of swearing, which isn't great, yes, is it, as Christians, but we did. And we were quite angry and didn't cope very well in a few different ways. But in terms of faith, I can't deny what's true. I think that's what gets to me every time. So, and that actually, the truth of this is that Jesus is who he is. There's no other explanation for me in a mind level. That's who he is. And so I've still got to work this true thing out for me. And one of the things that we did say is that we've lost our boy. I'm not losing all this as well. I'm not losing my church family. I'm not losing what has been a foundation for me. I don't get it. I don't understand what's going on. And even now, I don't understand why I haven't got my boy. You know, and I think this is going to be the same until I get to heaven. I said, Lord, I don't get it. And I'm hoping that I'm going to see a pretty picture when I get up there of what's happened. There's been definite healings, I guess, in our families as a result, so that I can see that would not have happened had it not my boy died. Do you know, and I think I wouldn't have a relationship with my brother, I wouldn't have other things that's happened as a result of this, but I'd so much prefer to have Ben here. So yeah. When I did have a friend say to me, oh, I fell out with God now because of this, certainly during the treatment, and I thought, I can totally understand that, but when we were in that, I would say, a more naive place, but I can't afford to not believe right now. But I guess having had time to heal and breathe, I would perhaps be more true and say, okay, I am still angry and I am still sad and I am still a little bit annoyed, but this is where we are,
yeah,
and this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Mm. As much as you feel able, a question which is slightly linked to what you've just been saying is, you've talked about how you've coped. How would you say Joe is coping now is one of the questions that somebody's asked her. How is he?
I'm going to answer this first because you have a different idea, don't you?
Go on.
I think my boy is anxious. And after Ben died, Joe developed some anxious habits,
yep,
which were very clear. And school were concerned about him for some of the things that he was doing. And he still has a couple of these that he still does.
Mm.
And I think this is a thing that he's not conscious about, but they're just kind of there. And so I think that maybe as he gets older, when he has children of his own or gets into a relationship with someone, that eventually he will discuss with someone, they'll say to him, what are you doing? Why are you doing that thing? Because they'll be close enough to notice. I think other people don't quite notice the same things. But he generally would say, oh, it's okay. So there have been times, like, so when he was doing the open day, he's quite musical, as Josiah, and when he was playing guitar at the open day and his friends' younger brothers and sisters were coming up through school and he didn't have his little brother there, he felt it then, you know, and that those kind of moments he feels it, doesn't he?
Dave, you've got a different perspective of these things. Tell us.
Well, I think partly the kind of bit that was clear after Ben died was that he withdrew and he was very subdued, and that was very apparent. I think that he would say now, he's not unhappy to talk about it, but he would say it's different for me than it is for a parent. And I would agree that essentially there is stuff under the surface probably that he's not necessarily conscious of himself that will work its way through. In a lot of ways he's doing really well in life, but I think it will take some time for some of this to kind of emerge.
Just moving to a slightly different question here. A little bit earlier we chatted about helpful things people might have done for you, but here's an interesting question. What are some of the least helpful things that people have said so we can avoid them? That's a helpful question, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sure. Can you think of things that have been really unhelpful that you perhaps say to people, maybe not this, anything come to mind?
Well, the thing that I dislike the most, and I know people really mean well by it, when they say to me, oh, but he's still in your heart, and my response is, I don't want him in my heart, I want him here. Don't say that to me again. I can't stand that.
No.
But I know for some people that is a comfort, but it's not a comfort for me.
Yeah.
And I think similarly, with very good intentions, and it's not wrong to say you've got your memories, because we have, and memories are a good thing, but they're not the same as that person's presence. So again, it's, you know, it's not meant in a bad way, but it's not that helpful. I would say generally that the biggest mistake that people make is not to say the wrong thing, it's to say nothing at all. I am more bothered by the idea that people are not talking about Ben, and we can't expect them to talk about him constantly, but we have people who remember Ben who never met him because they know how important he is. They remember us, they make an effort of going, we know this is a key date for you, and you know, it's a thing, and people support us wonderfully. And so then when people think, let's just not talk about it, that's actually really difficult. And I'd rather, I mean, I think about someone in church, I'm not going to say what he said because it'll sound bad, but I know his heart, and I'm more bothered by people not being mindful of it than people possibly saying something that's slightly clumsy. One of the things that I sometimes say is, do you know what, nobody knows the right thing to say.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what to do because there isn't a right thing to say and there isn't a right thing to do.
And you can't make it any worse because it's already really bad.
So actually, be with us, talk about it, stand with us, and that we'll get over the discomfort of that and the missteps of that, because we're all dealing with something horrible and that's not the other person's fault.
Yes. Can I ask, is it helpful if people say, how are you feeling at the moment? Is it helpful if people ask that sort of question? Because sometimes we can presume we know. Sometimes it's helpful if somebody actually says, just how is it for you now? Is that a helpful way of, do you think if folks are trying to chat to friends, perhaps going through a grief like that, is that a helpful way? Just to ask.
Yeah, I think to ask, but also be ready for them to say, not now, I'll talk about it later, or... Can we just talk about something normal? But equally, they might want the invitation to talk about it, and they might want to go, can we just talk about what you're having for tea? So it's being able to be normal, the ability to be normal, as well as having the chance. Yeah. Because actually, some people who don't know you might come and ask you that question, want to give you a big hug, but you'll be like, I don't really know you, and I don't think I really want to open up to you. You know, it's just knowing how your relationship is with that person.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think sometimes the best thing to say is, what can I do? Is there anything I can help with? So I remember a guy who I knew through a kind of church project who said, I've started baking and I'd like to bring you some bread. And I thought, you're a lovely guy, but I don't want to see you. And so I just said, can you pray? That'd be great. So actually what that person was doing is they were making a suggestion, but they were offering what's going to be helpful. And I thought, you know what, just pray for us because that's what's going to be helpful. So I think that thing about being open and about not having to figure it out, actually, to say, I am available, what can I do? Yes. And like the offer of a meal might be great, but you might think, I'd rather you just had a walk with me, me for a coffee or something. So that availability and that being willing to say, you tell me what you need.
There's quite a few questions here about prayer.
Yep.
Just give you a bit of a flavour. How would you now pray for someone who is sick? Or how do you pray when God is not who you wanted him to be? Those kind of similar. Mm-hmm. How do you pray when you face your own difficulties, but you see others perhaps going through sickness and loss? What would your approach be? Louise?
Well, I'll start that one. So I think that if you, I can't remember the name of the guy who said it, but if you pray for nobody, then nobody will get healed. But if you pray for some people, then some might get healed. And I think that if we just pray, then God will, either he will or he won't, but at least we've asked him to heal somebody. I believe that God does do miracles because we did see one.
Yeah.
But I don't certainly don't pray knowing that definitely there's gonna be a healing. I still have some expectancy, but it's taken some time.
Yeah.
I think it's taken me a good few years to get to the place where I can actually pray for healing and mean it. Mm.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing about prayer is dialogue, actually. Mm. Prayer out of relationship, where you're basically bringing it before God. And I think when we teach children to pray, we just say prayer is talking to God. I'm pretty comfortable with that as a theology of prayer. Mm. You can get into a place where it's almost like a formula. I'd say that was a little bit where I was before. When prayer is a formula, then you're basically saying the result will depend on how good or bad I am at praying. Mm. And I think that's not the gospel.
No.
And that's something that I've had to figure out. And so actually, I think if I go back to where we were, I think I wish I'd just been praying in a more simple way where there was more dialogue and more possibly openness to listen. Yes. And to trust God with the outcome.
Yes.
And ultimately, it's difficult to think God's God and we're not, and we've got to trust him with the outcome. But I think that's the reality of life, whether we like it or not. And so I think we'll probably pray in a more authentic, open way, and just bring things before God as a God who we believe loves us.
Yeah.
But the frame of reference we're talking with someone at the break is that if you believe that God wants to know us and he wants to know us for eternity, then we believe that that's the case and Ben's with him. Mm. And you know, faith is not about trying to get God to just get, you know, give us what we want in the here and now. I don't think that's what prayer is about.
Thank you. Here's something I think picks up on what you were sharing earlier, Dave. You were talking about the fact that God has been always with us through this, and that's the promise, not necessarily to sort it all out in this life, but to be with us. And this question, very honest, for those who've never experienced God's presence and who feel like giving up, what would you say? Should I start with Dave and then move to Louise? Is that Dave?
I think that the simplest prayer you can pray is, God, if you're there, help me, show yourself to me. And I think God honours that, and God wants to be with people, with whatever's going on. I think that God is the maker of life, he's the maker of each person, and he's bothered about everything that's going on in their lives. And there's a quite well-known Psalm 23, where God basically says, I will walk with you, and I think that's the promise that he makes. So I think it's a matter of taking up the invitation, really, and always, I don't have any problem with chucking out the challenge to God, say, okay, well, if you're supposed to be there, then I need you, and yes, I need you to show yourself in this.
Yeah. Louise, any thoughts on that? Somebody who's not felt God's presence, what would you say to that?
Sorry, I'm just having a think.
No, it's all right. That's all right. It's okay. I wonder if I can just have a little thing. I was just going to pick up, Dave, on what you were saying about the invitation in the 23rd Psalm, that God is with us. There's also something, isn't there, Jesus' invitation, ask and you will find.
Yeah.
Knock and the door will be opened. That he does invite us to approach him and simply to ask.
Yeah.
And as you say, you can do a lot worse than simply, you know, he's promised. And
I think, I mean, one of the things, we go back to what's helped us, is that the Bible talks about the body, the church as the body of Christ. And so the church, I believe that God's in the world, but the church sort of represents God very practically. And we live in a society that where people can be very isolated. And part of the way that God reveals himself is to say that there's a community here of people. You know, we talked about our experience of leading with our church, not leading because we've got the answers, but because we have a need for that community. And part of the way that I think that God shows himself and gives that invitation is invitation into community of people who are trying to figure it out as well.
So part of knowing God's presence might simply be that person who bowls up at the door with the cup of tea or the baking or whatever it might be, and shows us that love in a way.
Yeah, because you know, we go back to the not getting prayer thing. After we went to St. Tom's, and I wasn't praying, and I wasn't reading the Bible, I wasn't doing anything, but there were people that were praying for us. We knew we'd got people praying for us. There were people that were helping us very practically, and that was a key part of God kind of saying, you might believe that there is a God, and you might believe that Jesus died on the cross, but actually in terms of the idea, they're still believing that there is a God who wants to be involved in your life. The most tangible example of that early on was his people and the way that people stood with us and helped us, and that kind of reawakens almost that sort of practical belief that, yes, this is still a thing that can infuse and shape my day-to-day life.
Louise, did you want to?
Yeah. So part of my grief story is really that I've been numb for quite a long time, and I guess pushing the grief to one side. The result of that has been that actually I've had was diagnosed with PTSD probably about a year ago now, and I've had some treatment and some help with that and some therapy and those kind of things. And so I would say probably during that time, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that I particularly experienced God's presence, or that I can say with confidence, as Dave does, I knew that God was carrying me. But I can say that now, having had some time to stop and having had, we talk about community, so I now work for Church Army. And during that time, I've been able to, I've had some counselling through them and some time to stop and think, and also some prayer help at church as well. And I would say that now I am starting to experience some freedom and some more of God's presence. And it's just about actually, like you were saying, about asking. And so it could be that there's something going on where you feel like, oh, I just don't know, how would I possibly get into a place of being in God's presence and connecting with God? Well, it could be, like you say, through other people, we need to create some space. But it is possible, and I think that it may take some time. It might not be straight away that you go, I'm really excited, or I've got a bubbly feeling in my heart, which some people talk about. It could be a thing that takes time, and it's a process.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. You mentioned about numbness, Louise. There's another experience, right, I guess you will be familiar to you. Somebody's just asked this: how do you handle one of those waves of grief? And Dave talked earlier as well about the fact just sometimes out of nowhere you'll see something, you'll read something, you know, and how do you handle that?
Well, before now, it would have floored me, absolutely floored me. I've had moments where I just can't do very much. Other times where I've pushed through is when I was teaching, particularly on days where it was difficult, I'd be hiding in my cupboard in my classroom just for a few minutes while the kids carried on, or come back and say, you okay? But this year, for the first time on Ben's birthday, I managed to actually look at his things and go with it a little bit, and actually go in and face the pain, and knowing that by doing that, that it will get better.
Dave, you like to think when that wave of grief hits?
I think sometimes you just ride it out, and I think about when, you know, I'm not a particularly big crier. I don't have a problem with crying, but I'm not. But I remember that it would feel, particularly in the sort of weeks and months after we lost Ben, that you just kind of feel it building up, and it was like, this is going to happen, and it's going to be, it's a bit of a physical reaction, and then it will be over. And so sometimes there's a bit of a riding it out. I think sometimes when we have dates that we know are coming up, we will try and put things in place to go, I know this is going to be difficult, therefore we're going to have something in place. And I think probably the most important thing is being able to be real. So if you go back to the thing about availability and community, if you know you can be yourself when those things hit, that's very, that helps a lot. So, you know, my boss at the council was incredibly supportive. And when I went back to work, I didn't pretend. And I knew that I didn't have to, and that meant that if I needed to just walk out of the building, I would just walk out of the building. And I think I probably did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Because I had permission to do that. And I think part of the thing, actually, we're becoming more and more aware, it's a really good thing about mental health, and bringing that out of the closet. And actually, the most important thing is to say, let's be honest about this. Actually, loads of people feel like this. Yes. And then when you can, then we're in a position to help each other through with it, rather than some of us pretending that we're okay. Someone else admits that they're not. Oh, well, actually, what can we do with that? So it's really hard because you're dealing with something horrible that you wouldn't want to be there. But I think being able to be real and being supported to be real within that, and just standing with other people, you know, and we've had people who just, you know, let us cry all over them and stuff like that. Yeah. And that's what we've needed at that moment in time.
Yeah. We aren't going to get through all the questions tonight, but there are two in particular I think it would be good to just not miss. One person's asked this. You talked about at the time having difficulty reading the Bible or anything like that. Just wondered if you, through all this, do you have any particular special Bible verses that have been a comfort or a help, or just that have been an encouragement that come to mind, any particular ones?
One that comes to mind for me is Psalm 46, where it says, be still and know that I'm God. And I remember that from, you know, I talked about losing my job, which what that meant in council speak was somebody saying, we're not having this job anymore, your job's being deleted, so it's not like you're out the door.
Really?
Yeah. But it was, what's going to happen, you know, there's a period of time. I wasn't made unemployed. I was told this job is going to disappear. And so in terms of other jobs, I was kind of front of the queue for redeployment. So I got to the end of that year. I was 4 weeks from redundancy. I had my last interview, and I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here, in prayer. And God had already said, I will be with you, which I was not that impressed with. And somebody texted me that Bible verse, and I thought, that's why I can know that God will be with me, and God is here. And I think that for me is a place that I come back to, where when everything's kicking off and there's loads of stuff that you don't understand, God still says, be still and know that I'm here. And I think that's a place that I come back to.
Psalm 46, be still and know that I'm God. Yep. Yeah. Louise, any particular Bible verses come to mind for you?
I can't remember where it's from, but the one where you're lashed by storms but never comforted, but actually God brings it back round. But it's knowing that that God's been with us in the storm, and that actually He will bring us to the green open spaces as well. As another word that's been spoken over us. Yes. That my memory isn't very good. Yeah, I think I struggled really with the Bible stuff, because people spoke promises over us. in a way that wasn't entirely helpful.
Right.
And so actually it's been difficult to revisit those verses that could be a comfort.
Yes.
And think, oh, people spoke that over us as,
yes,
as a promise, which wasn't helpful at the time, if I'm honest with you.
Yes.
So to look at some of them, it's been difficult.
Yeah.
But I think since then, the verses for me that have been helpful about being in a family, I know that we're part of a family and that God is looking after us.
Yeah.
Verses.
Thank you. And that's a helpful thing when you talk, somebody asked about unhelpful things.
Mm.
Sometimes coming out with a sort of pat Bible verse
yeah.
may not actually, however well intentioned, may not be the most helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now here's a question which you may not have anticipated. What's best about Bristol? While you're thinking, what's best about St. Helens?
Best about St. Helens.
Leaving.
Leaving. Oh, how rude. There were Pimblett's Pies, but no longer. St. Helens Glass. Bernie Clifton. Remember the guy with the ostrich? Never mind.
Some people remember.
Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously the rugby club. But St. Helens Rugby Club is the top of the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Best about Bristol?
Bristol's lovely, and we've got loads of really good friends, so we get to go down, we get to enjoy it and the sort of vibrant cosmopolitan city that it is, and then we get to leave and not have to pay the house prices because they're not
yes.
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great, great.
Thank you.
Louise and Dave, thank you so much. Some of these questions themselves have been really very thoughtful, but also, again, quite hard-hitting. So thank you both. We've really appreciated the time you've given. Are you okay to hang around for
Absolutely.
A few more minutes if
yeah,
folks,
yes.
so you'll be over there and ready if folks would like to come and see you.
Thank
Can
you.
We just give a really big thank you to both David and Louise. Thank you both.